The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Park is presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Bartley. On my right is Judge Greenberg. On my left is Judge Allen. And we're here today for the matter of Lewis versus Wilkie, docket number 182075. Would counsel for the parties please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Francis Jackson, appearing for Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson.
Good morning. Joshua Walensky on behalf of the Secretary, and with me at counsel's table is Deputy Chief Counsel Anna White.
Thanks to both of you. Are the parties ready to proceed?
Yes.
Great. You will each have 30 minutes to present your arguments. Mr. Jackson, do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I ask to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. All right. Mr. Jackson, you may proceed.
Thank you. Presiding Judge Bartley, members of the court, may it please the court, I'm Francis Jackson. I appear this morning on behalf of the petitioner, Jesse Lewis, who seeks a writ of mandamus to compel the Secretary to process his unadjudicated claim for sinusitis. The Secretary concedes that the court has the authority to compel the Secretary to act where that action has been unlawfully withheld or unreasonably delayed. This case is unusual in that it was originally filed as an appeal, and the court, sua sponte, converted it to a writ to deal with this unadjudicated claim for sinusitis. The Secretary makes two arguments in opposition to the writ. First, that there was an unintentional waiver, abandonment, or withdrawal of the sinusitis claim. Alternatively, the Secretary argues that if the claim for sinusitis remains pending, the court has no power to act. Those arguments are both incorrect. As to the first, the board and the court had no jurisdiction over the sinusitis claim. The second part of that problem...
Wait a minute. Is that what the government is saying?
No, Your Honor. The government isn't saying that.
I tried to listen to what you just said.
Yes, Your Honor.
Would you repeat it again?
Certainly, Your Honor. I said that... I said that backwards. That is what the government is saying. The government is saying that... Essentially, there was an abandonment of the sinusitis claim.
And you disagree with that?
I disagree with that, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I twisted.
And I think you used the word inadvertent.
Yes.
Earlier.
I did.
Is that word relevant?
It is, Your Honor. What the Secretary is arguing, essentially, is that hidden in the footnote to the joint motion to remand is an abandonment. And I respectfully suggest that's not correct.
Well, even just assume for the moment that it was inadvertent.
Yes, sir.
Does the government argue anything beyond inadvertence?
The government argues cases, Your Honor, suggesting that the fact that an attorney was involved makes it a knowing waiver. And I respectfully would suggest that's not correct on these facts.
All right, go ahead. I think Judge Allen, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
I
think you were about to say.
I was basically going to ask what you did.
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
Can we put aside for the moment the petition?
Yes, sir.
And go back to your initial brief in the Lewis case in Appeal 17-83?
Yes, sir.
Can you summarize your argument there?
Essentially, Your Honor, the argument that we made in the brief was that the sinusitis claim should have been considered by the AMC not as allergic rhinitis, but as sinusitis and rated under Code 6514. That was the essence of the argument, and that it had not been, that was error, and that the case should be remanded for it to deal with the sinusitis claim.
So So was your view that somehow the board's 2014, what it called resolution, or it said it resolved, that the grant of service connection for rhinitis resolved the sinusitis claim? Was your view that that word resolved meant a positive grant of service connection for sinusitis?
Not specifically, Your Honor. What we took it to mean was that the underlying claim, which, as you know, was brought as a pro se claim for sinusitis, was being granted. But as you know, the AMC going forward did not characterize it in that way and did not grant sinusitis specifically under Code 6541.
Is that where they said an upper respiratory disease, parenthesis, claimed as sinusitis, close parenthesis?
I believe so, Your Honor. If I'm remembering the correct place of the quote, I think that's right, yes.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I was just going to say, can you give me your definition of resolved? Just off the top of your head. I have one if you don't.
Certainly,
if
Your Honor.
You don't.
I think it means that it has been dealt with, but in this case, keep in mind that it was dealt with in that the claim was granted, according to the AMC, but the sinusitis part of it was not processed, and to the extent that the board was talking about it in the sense of saying that it was resolved, keep in mind that that's dicta. The board had no jurisdiction over that claim.
So this is probably me, not you. But I'm having an exceedingly difficult time understanding what you're saying. And here's what I mean.
Sure.
So what do you understand the AMC to have done with respect to the sinusitis claim?
Your Honor, what I understand they did actually was to fragment that claim. To remember, it came back to the AMC as an upper respiratory claim with multiple parts. The AMC obtained a medical opinion, and in the medical opinion, the reviewing physician characterized the claim as allergic rhinitis, although he talks about the x-ray findings showing the existence of chronic maxillary sinusitis on the left. What the AMC does then is to take his language and say, okay, we're granting service connection for allergic rhinitis. And somehow sinusitis just kind of slides away at that point.
So is it, I have a follow-up question.
Sure.
So it sounds to me like what you just said was the AMC did nothing with respect to the sinusitis claim.
Right.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So then what did you understand the board to have done after that?
In 2014, Your Honor, the board talked about what the AMC did, but keep in mind that the board specifically said it didn't have jurisdiction because there had been no SOC on the allergic rhinitis claim, and it didn't mention any attempt to rate or take jurisdiction over the sinusitis claim. So in 2014, Your Honor, my view is that the board did nothing with regard to the sinusitis claim except to describe historically that it had been brought in 2007 and the AMC had granted a service connection for allergic rhinitis.
So from that point then in what this would have been in 2014?
Yes, sir.
So it sounds to me like your view is the AMC grants allergic rhinitis, service connection for allergic rhinitis.
Yes.
The sinusitis claim slips away. It's
yes.
sort of forgotten about.
Yes.
The board doesn't do anything with respect to that because, right, because they don't have jurisdiction in your view.
Correct.
So then in your mind, at that point, there is an unadjudicated claim.
Yes, sir.
What did you do, or your firm, between then and now? I mean, did you just, I mean, it sounds to me like you just let the sinusitis claim sit absolutely until my colleague converted your brief into a writ.
I don't think so, Your Honor. Keep in mind that the way the board left the case in 2014 was it didn't have jurisdiction because there had been no SOC over what was being called allergic rhinitis. We appealed that. That went up to the board finally in 2016, which is what brought us to the brief that Judge Bartley was asking about in 1783. At that point, as you know, we raised the argument that sinusitis should have been treated as a separate basis for rating, not just looked at under allergic rhinitis. Judge Greenberg correctly pointed out that Copeland precluded that and therefore converted it to a writ to deal with the remaining sinusitis claim.
So, but let me just go back to this. What did you do between the time when the AMC forgets, in your view, about the sinusitis claim and when you then appeal to the court, eventually in the appeal that led to this writ, where your argument in that brief was you should rate my allergic rhinitis by analogy as if it were sinusitis, right?
Sure.
Is there anything you can point me to in the record that at any point in time you or your, and I say you, your firm, did anything to say to the VA, hey, are you forgetting about this sinusitis claim?
Not specifically, Your Honor. What happened, as you recall, is the 2014 board decision splits off and says no SOC, so no jurisdiction over allergic rhinitis, talks only about the sinusitis in the introduction. We come to the court and we have a claim that does not involve the sinusitis, but we're dealing with that claim. We get remands on five of the six claims. We voluntarily abandon the shin splints claim. Case goes back down on remand. Separately, on a separate track, the allergic rhinitis piece comes back to the board in 2016, gets acted on, we come to the court. I'm not sure what the court is looking for in terms of some separate action, but we are following the process in the steps.
Well, wouldn't you, if you, it's just baffling to me that if you thought in 2014 that the VA had forgotten a claim, right, taken no action on that, that if you actually believed that at the time, that over the course of the following 4 years, you wouldn't have done something like write a letter that says, hey, are you working on the sinusitis claim? And so when that, for me, I'm just telling you where I am, when I see that conduct and I put it in the context of what might or might not be an ambiguous statement in the footnote in the joint motion to remand, you know, it suggests to me that you believed that, in fact, it was resolved because it was granted as allergic rhinitis, which is then makes perfect sense of the argument that it should have been rated by analogy to sinusitis. So that's what I was looking for. I didn't see anything in the record that suggested that anybody ever said anything to VA over the course of this time. And so that's where I'm coming from.
And that's correct, Ron, but you have to go back in time. Keep in mind that prior to Copeland, it didn't really matter how they characterized it. So there wasn't a reason prior to Copeland to say, excuse me, you're calling this the wrong thing, you're not dealing with the sinusitis piece, because it's all one bundle. It's sinusitis, it's bronchitis, it's asthma, they call it allergic rhinitis. It's a claim. It's this nucleus of facts about his nasal problems, breathing problems. It's going forward. It's coming up to the court. It's on its FDAMC and being acted on. It's being appealed. It's only in the context of subsequent decision in Copeland that makes it critical that you deal with it separately.
Getting back to your statement that the AMC forgot about the sinusitis when it granted service connection for rhinitis, wasn't sinusitis included in a 2013 statement of the case along with the other conditions that you were claiming service connection for, such as the bronchitis and the asthma? Wasn't it included in an SSOC denying it? I have that as a secretary's attachment to a response, a December 2013 SSOC.
Your Honor, I'm not quickly finding that. I'm recalling that in the
it's okay.
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm simply not remembering.
Okay. If there were an SSOC that was issued at the same time as the rating, an SSOC denying service connection for, or continuing the denial of service connection for sinusitis,
yes,
at the same time that there was a rating decision,
yes,
granting service connection for rhinitis,
yes.
And the board, and so the issue of sinusitis had been up to the board before.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so if they issue an SSOC continuing to deny service connection, what's your understanding of what should happen then?
The issue should be before the board, but you'll note that it's not listed as an issue before the board in the 2014 board decision, Your Honor. You'll notice that the characterization there is only, if you look at page 186, is only initial entitlement to initial compensable rating for allergic rhinitis.
Okay.
So to follow up to Judge Bartley's question, you know, the because there was a December 26, 2013 rating decision.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then your firm submitted a notice of disagreement on behalf of Mr. Lewis.
We did, Your Honor.
On February
28, 2014. Yes, Your Honor.
And it says, please treat this letter as a notice of disagreement for Mr. Lewis's decision dated December 26, 2013, as he desires to appeal. Please note that we are appealing for a higher than 0% rating for allergic rhinitis.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the rating decision, just like the SOC Judge Bartley mentioned, lists as not service-connected sinusitis. So did you actually perfect an appeal with respect to the sinusitis claim, given that the notice of disagreement reflects only the appealing for a higher than 0% allergic rhinitis?
I believe so, Your Honor, since that claim was being treated as a single claim by the AMC.
And yet under AB, you wouldn't really have to, under the AB versus Brown case, you wouldn't have to submit a separate NOD.
That's correct,
Your Honor. If it had been up to the board before on the issue of
that is correct,
service
Your Honor,
connection.
Can you finish? What order do you want us to issue?
Your Honor, we want the court to issue a writ directing the secretary to process the claim for sinusitis on its merits.
And in your view, where is it right now, knowing that there had been, I believe, an SSOC in December 2013 continuing the denial of service connection?
Your Honor, I I guess technically that means it's at the board. I don't see that the board recognizes it as being there, but that if it is in fact perfected by a jurisdiction conferring SSOC in 2013, then it would be at the board.
Uh-huh. And let's just say that the secretary, I'm having trouble remembering his brief exactly in the 17-83 appeal, but let's just say that he argued that the statement in the 2014 board decision, let me just look at that statement. The statement in the 2014 board decision that in December 2013, the AMC granted service connection for allergic rhinitis and thereby resolved the appeal as to that issue. Let's just say that the secretary argues that that was an actual board decision on the issue. First of all, do you think it was the gist of your brief, I think, was that this was not an actual decision.
That's correct.
We have a line of case law about implicit denials or implicit decisions or implied denial, whatever you want to call it, starting with the Deschotel case, and our Ingram case. Do you recall any of the requirements for an implicit denial?
Well, the critical requirement for implicit denial, as I understand it, Your Honor, is that there be a sufficient description of the denial to put a reasonable veteran on notice that he needs to take further action, and that, generally speaking, fairly explicit notice is required. And then the Cogburn factors, obviously, and those have to be considered in the event of an implicit denial.
And in the board, 2014 board decision, I think, as you note, sinusitis is not listed in the issues.
Yes, sure.
Either on the front page
or elsewhere,
or anywhere in the decision except for that one or two sentences there on page, on R at 187.
Yes, sure.
So, in your view, this doesn't meet the requirements of an implicit denial?
That would be correct, Your Honor. In my view, it does not. And to shift gears slightly, if you go on from that board decision to the court, there's a very explicit recitation in the JMR of the issues that were before the board and are now before the court, and they are limited to the two hearing issues, the left shoulder disability, the lower respiratory disease, not including sinusitis, and a GERD claim. Those five issues are said to be before the court explicitly. And then if you look, that's at 97 of the record, and if you look at the next page on 98, there's an acknowledgement of an explicit abandonment of the shin splints issue. And then if you look at the court's order on 2000, I think it's 204, is it? The court order says the one issue is dismissed, everything else is remanded.
So if you had thought at the time of the 2014 board decision, I'm sorry to be stuck on this, if you had thought that the AMC had forgotten about the sinusitis claim, what did you think the board meant when it says the grant of allergic rhinitis resolved it?
This
goes back to Judge Bartley's first question,
sure.
What does resolved mean?
What we were anticipating, Your Honor, was that what was being, what was happening here was this was being treated as a claim that for whatever reasons the board and the AMC were attaching different labels to at different times, but there was service connection, and we were anticipating that going forward, as you know, we appealed that the decision for 0% rating. We were anticipating that going forward, the sinusitis claim would be rated under 6514 as part of the process appealing that 0%. And in retrospect, that's probably not the best way that we should have viewed it, but that, in fact, is how we did it.
But I think what's troubling, at least and partially, is what did you do about it between 2014 and this matter?
As you
or what did the veteran do about it, or were you and the veteran?
What we all collectively did was to appeal that non-compensable rating, and that, as you know, came back to the court in 2016,
right,
which is what brought it to you.
So the bottom line for you is sinusitis was never decided on the merits,
Let me just break in here. Let's add another 3 minutes for argument.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rosa.
You never abandoned it. It was never decided. And you want an order from the court remanding it to the board to decide it.
That's correct.
So when you appealed to in this case that before it was converted, okay?
Yes, sir.
If you thought at that time that there was an unadjudicated sinusitis claim, and your argument was in that appeal that the allergic rhinitis claim should have been rated by analogy to sinusitis, then logically you also thought that there was a pure sinusitis claim still pending, according to what you're saying. So you would have then, under that logic, had two different conditions rated under the same diagnostic code, the sinusitis claim that had been forgotten and the allergic rhinitis claim that you wanted rated by analogy to sinusitis?
Essentially, Your Honor, as you know, there's no pyramiding rule where there's a non-compensable rating, so you can rate them both.
Well, but your argument in the appeal was to get a compensable rating by using the sinusitis diagnostic code, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I don't follow that at all. I just have to tell you that this may have no legal consequence at all, but it seems to me it's inconceivable, based on your actions over 4 years, that you truly believed at each point in the process that the sinusitis claim was still pending. That may have no legal significance, but it's just it's hard to credit.
Let me try to respond directly to that, and I apologize if I'm taking up too much time. The problem in dealing with these things is that this is a messy process. As you know, at different points in the process, the claim's gotten various names and titles. What we attempted to do in 2016 was to move this forward as directly as possible by bringing up the non-compensable allergic rhinitis claim and trying to resolve the case in that way. Obviously, as you know, the court has rejected that approach, and that leaves only the remaining alternative of dealing with this as an unadjudicated claim. I mean, it would have been preferable from our perspective to have been able to resolve it as a...
Rosa, would you add another 3 minutes?
But since we weren't able to, the alternative necessarily is to pursue it as the unadjudicated claim. That's clumsier and slower and not what we would have preferred, but that's where we are.
Now, assuming that just getting back to questions and comments from the bench about what you did or did not do in this interim time period. When the AMC issued an SSOC denying sinusitis in December 2013, in your view, the onus was not on you to do anything, but under AB, the case would come back, the sinusitis issue would come back, pop back up to the board because you had previously fulfilled all the requirements for appeal, meaning an NOD and a Form 9.
Essentially, Your Honor. I mean, I don't think we sat down and mapped that out, but yes.
Okay.
Unless there are further questions, I'll cede the remainder of my extended time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Mr. Walensky, you may proceed.
Why shouldn't we grant the order that the appellant wants?
Good morning, Your Honors. Essentially because there is no indisputable right to the claim of, to the petition, to the writ of mandamus request. There's neither an outstanding claim nor an outstanding appeal for service connection for sinusitis.
So this relates to the power or the jurisdiction of the court rather than the merits of the appeal, writ, petition, however you style it?
No, the second, I mean, this, respectfully, Your Honor.
Assuming that the veteran has a right to review of his sinusitis claim, and assuming for whatever reason it wasn't perfected, wasn't decided on the merits by the Secretary, why shouldn't we have the power to direct you to do it?
So the Secretary believes that under the Court's Rule 21, the writ request is deficient for a number of reasons. And notably, the fact is that petitioner does not have an indisputable right to which he seeks. Not only that, the response to court order was overly vague, and there are, in fact, adequate remedies which do not necessitate the issuance of a writ.
What are they?
The adequate remedies, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Notably, as Judge Allen had mentioned in questioning, there could have been correspondence to the board directly asking the chairman as to the status of the appeal, if petitioner believed that there was an appeal outstanding.
When would that have ripened? How many months or years does it take before a lawyer or a veteran is supposed to ask the chairman of the board, what's taking you so long, or where's my case?
Well, Your Honor, in looking at previous writ of mandamus cases from this court, there are two that come to mind. Costanza, which is the case that was cited in the court's order, noted that an 11-month delay, absent any communication with VA, was insufficient for a writ of mandamus. The comparison case is Erspanner, which was early in this court's history. And in that case, it took the appellant, or the court deemed the fact that a 3-year delay and 30 phone calls to the agency warranted the writ of mandamus. Here, going on the line of questioning from Judge Allen, absent any action from petitioner to notify VA at all that there was, that there seemed to be appeal lost in the system, there were adequate remedies in initially just even filing or any correspondence directly
to VA. All right, well, I'm sorry. I think I interrupted you, but the first one you said was call or write the chairman of the board. What other adequate remedies?
Petitioner also had the opportunity to file a Q motion with regard to the July 2014 board decision regarding the scope of the board's jurisdiction in that July 2014 determination. A new claim for sinusitis could have been filed, in which case there could have been argument or disagreement as to the effective date. And arguably, there might have been direct argument in this to the court in docket number 17-0083.
So in your view, the 2014 board decision constituted a denial of service connection for sinusitis?
No, Your Honor. What the July 2014 board decision represents is a determination as to the scope of its jurisdiction and a notation that because allergic rhinitis had been granted, that the claim that or the assertion that had initiated as sinusitis was resolved and that an upper respiratory disorder was no longer in appellate status.
Could, in your view, could Mr. Lewis have appealed that?
Your Honor, the July 2014 determination?
Yes, the determination as you've just described it.
Absolutely. And the parties entered into a joint motion for partial remand in April of 2015. That would have been a ripe opportunity to bring any argument whatsoever as to the board's characterization of the scope of its jurisdiction or the scope of the appeal at that point. Not only was petitioner not bring argument against that classification, but the secretary contends that the petitioner expressly agreed to the classification of the appeal, moving on from that April 2015 joint motion for partial remand. And again, looking into the context, there was no correspondence disagreeing with that until the court construed the appellant's brief in 17-0083 as a petition.
So I think we have in Majid or Magid talk about the board can grant, deny, or remand. So it sounds like you're saying their treatment of sinusitis does not fall into any of those categories.
Excuse me.
The board's 2014 statement about having resolved the sinusitis claim does not fall into any of those categories.
May I have one moment just to confer with co-counsel?
Sure.
So, yes, Your Honor, there was not an overt grant or denial, there was also not a dismissal of sinusitis from that July 2014 board decision.
And yet your view is that Mr. Lewis should have known what to do with your statement that the whole thing resolved, is just resolved, just using the word resolved, which I may note is a kind of a neutral term. It doesn't indicate resolved in favor of who.
So if we could just backtrack for a moment to look at the procedural history, what we have here is a singular assertion of sinusitis made in a 2007 claim. And then upon the denial of sinusitis and then the transfer to the board takes the court's case law of Clemens and expands the scope and then develops accordingly, not just for the singular assertion of sinusitis, but also for, it noted, bronchitis, asthma, and then also for rhinitis. And VA obtains a medical opinion that states that appellant is actually diagnosed with rhinitis, notes a history of sinusitis, and then in rationale says what the petitioner believed to have been sinusitis for this period of time is not sinusitis because it is not chronic in nature, and then says what the petitioner believes is sinusitis is actually rhinitis, and that is entitled, and that was related to service. And then in a separate rating decision, the AMC grants that entitlement. And so to say that the petitioner would have known the context of that statement by the board, after that considerable amount of development and after that procedural history, Secretary would contend that yes, that the term resolve connotes an understanding as to the appeal at that portion, at that period in time.
Should know then that it constituted a denial of service connection?
It should constitute the fact. It wasn't a denial of service connection, Your Honor. It simply was a statement regarding the scope of its jurisdiction and that because of an assertion of sinusitis, the subsequent grant of allergic rhinitis resolved or fulfilled the claim as to what sinusitis represented for an upper respiratory disorder. And the board under Part 20, 101 has the ability to define the scope of its jurisdiction. And so it's in that that portion of the regulation that the Secretary asks the court to view that statement in July of 2014.
Now, this was not this. This whenever I was questioning Mr. Lewis's counsel a few minutes ago, I referred to a December 2013 SSOC, which I think was not part of the ROP, but apparently was part of the RBA, and you attached it to one of your responses?
Yes, Your Honor, yes. That is an attachment.
And so there was, correct me if I'm wrong, because of that discrepancy, it wasn't in the record, it was just attached to something that you submitted. I'm a little unclear as to the procedure that happened here, but would I be correct in saying that around the same time, possibly even the same date, that the AMC granted service connection for allergic rhinitis, it issued an SSOC denying service connection for sinusitis?
That is correct, Your Honor. In December of 2013, there was a rating decision that granted allergic rhinitis and an SSOC that continued the issue of the respiratory disease, and in that also noted that sinusitis was not related to service. In 2013,
The SSOC listed the denial of service connection for sinusitis as an issue.
The issue was brought. It was the exact issue that had come from the board in the June 2013 remand, which was classified as entitlement to service connection for a respiratory disability to include bronchitis, sinusitis, and asthma.
And then it separated them out.
It was in one line. In one line, but it did discuss all disabilities in that issue in the SSOC, and then prior to the board's July 2014 decision, which said that the grant of allergic rhinitis had resolved the original assertion of sinusitis.
And so I'm posing to you the same question that I posed to Mr. Lewis's counsel. What normally happens after an SSOC that contains a denial where the veteran has previously filed an appeal and perfected the appeal?
So as a matter of course, the SSOC then gets transferred to the board.
Without the need for any effort on the part of the veteran.
Correct. And so but then at the board does have the authority to define the scope of its jurisdiction. And so the grant of allergic rhinitis, the RO or the AMC, they themselves cannot determine that the appeal has been resolved or that the claim for an upper respiratory disease has been granted. The board, however, has that ability. And the secretary would cite to this court's decision on Juarez, which discussed Myers. With leave, Your Honors, I do not believe that was cited to. But that speaks to the fact that something remains in appellate status. The RO cannot take it out of appellate status, but the board then has the ability to review its own jurisdiction as to whether or not something was in appellate status.
It is bothering me that you're calling the statement that this issue was resolved a matter of defining the scope of jurisdiction. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, when something usually comes up, a denial of an SSOC to the board, pops back up, doesn't the board usually list the issue on the face of the decision and actually determine whether there should be service connection or not, assuming the issue is service connection?
Yes, Your Honor. But to the extent that there is that discussion, if anything else, by mentioning allergic rhinitis and sinusitis, it does communicate to the veteran that it doesn't communicate to the veteran that sinusitis has been granted. And if anything, it notes that allergic rhinitis has been granted, but not sinusitis, given that procedural history. And it would not necessarily be confusing to petitioner, or because of the procedural history, given the fact that the claim had been broadened to his benefit and allowing for something to be service connected, that of the allergic rhinitis based upon the development that VA had undertaken.
And I mentioned also to appellant's counsel earlier the Ingram decision and the implicit denial line of cases. So your would this constitute an implicit denial by the board, or in your view, it doesn't even fall in that category because it has to do with jurisdiction?
I would imagine, to the extent that an implicit denial would be in play, that yes, that statement would certainly be enough, given the procedural history, to reaffirm the fact that sinusitis had not been granted by the RO.
Had not been granted or had
or was
been denied?
And I'm sorry, it was overtly denied. Sinusitis was overtly denied by the regional office.
What does overtly denied mean?
There was...
it's either denied or it's...
Respectfully, Your Honor, there was a rating decision that denied sinusitis.
So overt is no particular term of art that we should...
There's no...
Why'd you use it? What does it mean?
It was the term that came to mind, Your Honor. Just that it was that in with regard to the fact that this is a complex procedural history, it's important to note that sinusitis was denied by the regional office.
And that's your position? That's the Secretary's position?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. There was a rating decision that denied sinusitis.
And therefore, what should have happened? What should the veteran have done?
Well, the veteran did appeal the denial of sinusitis. And then upon redevelopment, the board correctly recharacterized the issue in, I believe it was originally in December of 2012, and kept the recategorization in June of 2013, then developed for the medical examination, which provided for a basis for the grant of service connection for rhinitis.
In December 2013?
December 2013 was a board remand for additional development for a medical opinion.
Could I ask you a question about the jurisdictional point you're raising? So, two steps for me here. First, so in your view, and definitely tell me if I've got this wrong, in the 2014, July 2014 board decision, if you're framing that discussion as jurisdictional about the rhinitis and sinusitis, then if the board, so if the board was right that it had no jurisdiction, essentially, then the appellant couldn't have appealed to the court that determination, right?
Your Honor, I do believe that that determination still could have been appealed.
But the determination would have only been as to the board's jurisdiction. It wouldn't have been to the merits, right?
Working through that, yes, I believe so, Your Honor.
Okay, because you started to say working with the hypothetical, but I'm trying to mimic your position so I can understand this. And I'll tell you my end question is, if you are right about that, then it doesn't matter what was said in the joint motion for remand, right? Because that footnote on which, you know, you rely and I question the appellant's counsel, if the merits could never have been before the court, then wouldn't that suggest that the joint motion couldn't resolve that issue because under your logic, the board never had jurisdiction, so it couldn't have been before the court?
So
I'm just wondering whether your positions are consistent on that point or whether you're making them in the alternative.
If I may recategorize the argument that the Secretary brings forward, the first point is the fact that appellant did expressly abandon the claim or the assertion of sinusitis in the April 2015 joint motion for partial remand. To the extent that appellant did not expressly abandon if the court doesn't find the fact that there was no argument regarding that determination, appellant has waived or abandoned the argument as to whether or not there was an outstanding claim for sinusitis. Moreover, if the board determination is correct, there would not be an indisputable right to an appeal regarding sinusitis. And moreover, even if the board is incorrect, the board has made a interpretation of law, and that is not the arbitrary refusal to act. And that, again, the Secretary points to the case of Erspommer, which reviewed the Supreme Court case of Black, and stated that when there's an interpretation of law, there's not an action, and that, therefore, cannot be an arbitrary refusal to act, which would necessitate the issuance of a writ.
Well, but that's not the standard anymore, right? The arbitrary refusal to act is not the standard.
I believe if you're mentioning the Track or the Martin cases, I believe that speaks to undue delay.
Well, but so this is sort of a, I've had this discussion with one of my law clerks, right? It all depends on how you see this, right? Because if a sinusitis claim has been pending since at least 2014 in appellate status and nothing has been done, then it is a question of unreasonable delay. If the claim was resolved, according to you, well, then, of course, there is no delay because there is no claim. But
then also, if I may, to move on to that point, then the other factor in a writ context would be the lack of adequate remedies, and which I was originally asked by Judge Greenberg. The Secretary would argue that there are adequate remedies, notably the appeal process, which again would not necessitate, which because there are remedies, does not necessitate the issuance of the writ.
Well, but if it seems as if the appellant's view, following under Judge Bartley's questions about the SSOC, is that if the claim exists, it's at the board now and has always been, right, because it returned to the board after the SSOC.
So, respectfully, Your Honor, so yes, but also to that point, it was vague up into today's presentation as to what exactly the writ request from petitioner would have included. And so I believe on the response to court order, there was interpretation as to what exactly petitioner was requesting from this court. But the Secretary would concede only to the extent that if there would be a outstanding claim remaining or adjudication remaining, it would be at the board level as opposed to the RO level, again, because to the conversation we had earlier, Judge Greenberg, sinusitis had been denied in a rating decision. But again, that's not a concession that it is outstanding and not a concession that a writ would be warranted in the circumstances.
But you do agree that if the court were to rule that the sinusitis claim exists, right, that it exists at the board now.
And again, going through all the prior arguments and that, if that's where the court were to land, again, only for the purposes of discussion, Secretary obviously believes that there is no outstanding claim nor appeal for sinusitis.
Now, I wanted to get you to look at the language of the footnote in the 2015 JMPR. I mean, we were just talking about how it's possible sinusitis wasn't even up. I know your argument is that he should have appealed it. He had the opportunity back whenever the board made its 2014 decision, and that this footnote somehow represents the fact that he had decided not to pursue the issue. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The footnote certainly represents the fact that a claim for a respiratory disorder, which had been divided as a lower respiratory disorder and an upper respiratory disorder, that the parties at that point in time, with that joint motion for partial remand, agreed that only the lower respiratory disorder, which speaks to the asthma and bronchitis, was still in dispute for service connection purposes.
And you're saying that's all, because it sounds like now you're saying that's all that footnote means, but in your briefing, in the appeal docket, it sounded like you were arguing that it meant something more than just an acknowledgement that the board had divided upper and lower and that lower was up at the court.
To that point, I would also speak to the briefing by appellant in 17-0083 that noted that the parties agreed in that footnote, and that's certainly what was highlighted in the secretary's response to court order. So the position would be that at this point in the writ context, that the footnote represents an express abandonment of the upper respiratory disorder.
That this footnote combined with what he said in his brief, is that what you're saying?
I think the footnote speaks to the express abandonment of the upper respiratory disorder on its face.
Where does it expressly say that?
The categorization, the parties agreed that the board properly characterized the scope of appellant's claim for service connection for a respiratory disorder as it currently stands when it classified it as a claim for service connection for a lower respiratory condition. And that was what was eventually remanded. And so the upper respiratory portion, the rhinitis and sinusitis portion, that had been resolved, and therefore the party's agreement as to what remained or what further development from the board was correct and is an express agreement that the other portion of the respiratory disease, the upper respiratory, was no longer at issue.
So it's the last sentence that you are relying on. And you think that this last sentence that says the parties agree that the board properly characterized the scope of the claim for service connection for a respiratory disorder as it currently stands, when it classified it as a claim for service connection for a lower, you're saying that sentence is an express abandonment of any claim regarding sinusitis?
I also believe that the two sentences prior to do also provide some context and would also lead to that same interpretation. But again, also, not only does the footnote itself speak, but again, petitioner did not disagree with that categorization or with that footnote until the notice of docketing for this writ petition. And petitioner in the brief in 17-0083 deemed the categorization originally by the board as correct, and in briefing said that the parties agreed and cited to this footnote. And so it's only upon the response to court order that we now have a change in position from petitioner. And the secretary must...
What's wrong with that?
The secretary must speak to the fact that the secretary cited the case of Mason in the response to court order, and Mason versus Shinseki. And in that case, it discussed how, especially representing counsel, in that case, courts should not be construing arguments on behalf of represented parties. And the secretary asks that practice move even go a step further, and that the court should not be construing writ petitions for represented parties. It was not argued by petitioner either to the agency or in the brief, and the conversion or the construing of that brief has now manufactured a dispute between the parties regarding the April 2015 joint motion for partial remand. But before that notice of docketing, there was not a disagreement as to the terms of the JMR or the meaning of that JMR.
Well, all right, but that argument centers on what the device or what the mechanism is to get here to ask the court to do something that the board, in the opinion of the veteran, was compelled to do and hadn't done. And just focusing for a moment on Judge Bartley's reading of the footnote, I didn't hear the word sinusitis in there. The distinction seemed to be upper versus lower.
In one of the sentences prior to, the footnote does speak for, in its decision on appeal here, the board found that the rating award resolved what it considered to be a claim for service connection for an upper respiratory disease, which included appellant's claim for benefits for sinusitis, in that same footnote, Your Honor.
Did the board ever rate sinusitis separately?
No, Your Honor. And so not only, the Secretary would like to elaborate on the fact that not only was there no dispute to the April 2014 joint motion for partial remand prior to the issuance of the notice of docketing, the position that petitioner is now taking in that response to court order is... At one point, the petitioner asks that this joint motion for partial remand should have no effect. And that is certainly contrary to case law from this court that states that, in fact, Stegall, that as a, that there is that a remand provides with it as a matter of law compliance with the terms either of a remand from the parties or from the court. And also the fact that the court has given the parties the ability to negotiate joint motions for partial remand and recategorize issues for expediency or for clarification. And it's for that reason why the Secretary would ask that the court discourage the practice of construing writs after there had been, especially in this context where there had been no dispute to the, there's been no dispute to what the footnote meant at the time, and no dispute as to what it meant 3 or 4 years after the fact.
So you're saying that our power, our jurisdiction, or our exercise of our jurisdiction is limited by what the parties had agreed to some years ago, but now apparently changed their mind?
No, Your Honor. The Secretary is not. Certainly the court has jurisdiction to review writs and mandamus. And it's not necessarily unprecedented for the court to construe a writ. The Secretary is just asking that the practice be discouraged, especially
why?
In the context of represented parties.
Why?
Rosa, would you please add a few minutes?
Why would you want to discourage any application by a veteran or a veteran's attorney by any device to the court?
We're not discouraging.
We have an adversarial system. Secretary is very well represented, including in this case.
Well,
you've stated
your
argument very well. So what's wrong with the court deciding any application?
In the context of a represented party, the court is making decisions that would be reserved for the advocate. And petitioner's counsel did not bring a writ request. Petitioner's counsel argued accordingly based upon what his firm had felt would be most advantageous to his client. And that did not include seeking a writ of mandamus from this court until after the court's initiation of the notice of docketing.
Well, let's assume hypothetically for a moment that counsel thought that the best way to get a rating for sinusitis was by a certain device, an appeal or something like that. The court, let's assume hypothetically on its own, said, you know, this is not the appropriate way to go, or the better way to go would be the writ process. What's wrong with that?
To discuss.
But still, we're still talking about the same essential issue. Was there or wasn't there a sinusitis determination by the Secretary, which has been consistently the position of the veteran all along?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, I don't believe it has been so consistent that petitioner believed that there was an outstanding appeal for service connection for sinusitis.
So, in other words, you're saying that the veteran either abandoned the sinusitis appeal or it was, in fact, resolved and not properly appealed, and the court has no business in substituting its judgment for that of counsel in terms of the device by which the appeal is heard.
To the last point you've mentioned, Your Honor, certainly the Secretary would ask that the court defer to counsel and determinations by counsel as to arguments and actions brought before the court. To the initial part of the question, again, the Secretary contends that there is not an outstanding appeal for service connection for sinusitis because the parties did expressly petitioner did expressly abandon the upper respiratory portion, and to the extent that that was not abandoned, that the July 2014 board determination was an interpretation and action and notice to the petitioner.
And so, Mr. Olinsky, this is a difficult argument that you're making now, difficult as an advocacy sort of thing, but I just want to, the Secretary would favor, I suppose, an opinion that said the court should not convert an appeal in a represented case into a petition. I mean, that's fundamentally what you're saying.
It, with representing parties, the Secretary would maintain that that practice should be discouraged.
So, discouraged. So, is the Secretary saying that it's something that's... I really do appreciate this is difficult as an advocate, but is that what you're saying, that it should just be discouraged, but it can happen and it's totally fine, or is the Secretary's position that this just shouldn't happen?
May I have a moment to confer with co-counsel for a moment?
And you can even go back another row if you want to confer.
Rosa, would you please have 3 minutes?
If I may, Ms. Flynn is here, and this is an important policy determination, and I would think we would want to give the Secretary latitude to make whatever conference.
Your Honors, the Court should not be engaging in the practice of construing represented parties' briefs as writ petitions.
So that's stronger than discourage?
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure what the position was, because you were being tremendously respectful in what you were saying, and now that I'm a judge, I encourage respectfulness. However, sometimes
understood, and thank you for the leave to understand the scope of that.
All right, now that we understand your position, my question is, again, to repeat it, why not? What's the public policy objection to the conversion to a writ process? Makes more work for the Secretary? It's not fair? It's wrong as a matter of law? What is it? What's the objection?
Well, Your Honor, I think in this circumstance, the objection would be resources. The objection would be the Court's resources as well. In the circumstances...
No, it isn't for the Court to decide.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But in the circumstances we have here, where now, after a July 2014 board decision had determined the scope of its jurisdiction and the parties agreed to that determination, that now, 4 years later, that is now at issue, when perhaps a correspondence to the Board of Veterans' Appeals asking the status of the appeal would have at least shown some sort of alternative means to the relief sought, then yes, a writ... the Secretary used the term inappropriate in the response to court order, and the Secretary would say here again that it certainly is inappropriate for the Court to construe an entirely new cause of action on behalf of a represented party.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, Your Honors, in sum, the Secretary maintains that under the Court's Rule 21, the writ request should be dismissed because there is not an indisputable right to the appeal of sinusitis, the request was overly vague, and there are, in fact, adequate alternative remedies. In the alternative, the Court should deny the writ of mandamus. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Walensky. Mr. Jackson, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you. Your Honor, let me, if I may, make five very quick points. First, this Court never had jurisdiction because sinusitis was never granted, denied, or remanded by the Board. Second, the Board did not take jurisdiction in 2014 or subsequently, and thus the JMR, which only rests on the action of the Board, has no effect on sinusitis. I'm not saying it had no effect, and Mr. Walensky, to the extent he suggests that we're saying that, is not correct. Certainly the JMR has effect, but not on this particular claim because it wasn't before the Board or the Court. The footnote only characterized what was before the Court. It talks about the respiratory disorder as it currently stands, which was, as you know, the lower respiratory disorder. As to the policy issue, Your Honor,
Are you at number three or number four?
I'm sorry. That was number three as to the four, and this is number four, Your Honor. As to the policy issue, Mason, while it discourages the suggestion of positions on behalf of a represented party, makes very clear that the Court has the authority to raise issues. There is no issue that the Court lacks the ability or the authority to do that.
No, but you would agree, though, that say we wrote an opinion that enshrined this ability to, in a represented case, to convert a portion of an appeal to a petition, that would be an extension of the logic of Mason, right? Because Mason was about arguments.
It would, Your Honor, but it's technically dicta in Mason, but Mason goes on to talk about the specific authority of the court to raise entire issues that were not raised by the parties. And certainly that covers the procedural vehicle as well as the, in that case, arguments. Mason was very clear on that. The last point I wanted to touch very quickly is that there is no adequate alternative basis. The Secretary suggests in his pleadings that the possibility of a CUE claim is an adequate alternative remedy. I would suggest to you that neither of the cases that are cited holds that, and I found no case saying that the possibility of a CUE claim is an adequate alternative.
What about the adequate alternative would be? I agree with you, frankly, about the Q claim or the Q motion. But what about the letter to the board that says, hey, this thing has been sitting with you for 4 years? Since the writ is an extraordinary remedy, doesn't the movement or the petitioner have some obligation to try to avail themselves of that?
Certainly, Your Honor, but that's not an adequate alternative remedy. Keep in mind that the Secretary's stated position here is that there is no claim for them to act on. So certainly a letter to them saying you should act on the claim that you've said isn't even pending is unlikely to produce very positive results.
Well, maybe, except that the position is coming from the General Counsel's office, right? And so if this is lodged at the board, who knows what the board will do?
Well, I think we've had a good example of that here in terms of how they handled this particular issue by neither granting, denying, or remanding. But I think it's fair for us to treat the Secretary as a unilateral or a single entity for purposes of this case. They've taken the position the claim's not pending. I think, therefore, it's fair game to say that there is no alternative remedy given those facts. Unless there are other questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. The court thanks counsel for both parties for your arguments, and the case is submitted for consideration, and the court will now come down and greet counsel.